Last week, 2 weeks ago, that we discussed the Hakdamah to the Mishnah Berurah, and as part of the Hakdamah to the Mishnah Berurah, I tried to describe to you the difference between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, or at least some of the differences between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, we still need to get back to the Hakdamah to the Mishnah Berurah and Chelek Gimel, but I just thought it would be a good idea to take a look at the Hakdamah to the Aruch HaShulchan and get an idea of what type of Sefer the Aruch HaShulchan is. It happens to be there's a certain amount of Hashkacha involved, because the yard site, I wrote 15 Adar Beis, it's really 22nd. Chaf Beis, Adar Beis, is the yard site of the Aruch HaShulchan. So it turns out that tomorrow is his yard site. So, not bad, right? We're giving the shir the day before his yard site. And it also happens to be he mentions Parshas Vayakel in the first paragraph of his Hakdamah. So, I assume someone up there is telling me it was a good idea to give the Hakdamah the Aruch HaShulchan today. The Aruch HaShulchan lived in the last part of the 19th century and very early part of the 20th century. He died in around 1908. He was born into a wealthy family. He did not learn much time in yeshiva. Apparently, he spent 1 year in Valazhin in like 1943 or so at a very young age, but most of the time he preferred to learn by himself, and as many great geniuses have throughout history, they weren't so into having chavrusas, they felt that or learning in the confines of yeshiva, they felt that sometimes it would limit them. And they needed to expand their incredible minds. So he most of the time did not learn in yeshiva. He learned under the direction of a community rav where he grew up. He was the rav of Navardak for 34 years, which is a significant amount of time. And a lot of people, when they describe the quality of the Aruch HaShulchan and what makes the Aruch HaShulchan different, then the Mishnah Berurah point to that exact prat. That the Aruch HaShulchan spent 34 years in Vardik, 9 more years in 43 years in Rabbanus, paskening real shailas for real people. And the Mishnah Berurah was in a yeshiva. The Mishnah Berurah was in the Chafetz Chaim was in yeshiva in Radin. Now, obviously, he did deal with real people, and people in yeshivas are also real people, but it's a different kind of psak halacha when you're dealing with people that are working for a living and people that are dealing with the outside world. He has a little bit of a different appreciation of halacha that a lot of people put a lot of stock into. This is not his only sefer. The Aruch HaShulchan is not his only sefer. He also wrote a sefer called the Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid, which is an Aruch HaShulchan type of sefer based on the sugyas and going through the halacha, but on all those halachas that are not nogei lemaisa, that are only for when the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt. So just like the Rambam before him wrote a halacha sefer on everything, even those things that are going to be when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, the Aruch HaShulchan wrote several volumes, I have it at home, of Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid on all the halachas for when the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt. He also wrote a fantastic Haggadah called Lel Shimurim. I was going to do the Hakdamah to the Aruch HaShulchan's Haggadah today, but the Hakdamah wasn't really a Hakdamah. It was more like it was just a shir on the Zman of Bedikas Chametz. So, I don't know, I didn't feel like it really serves to introduce the Haggadah or his particular commentary in the Haggadah. He also wrote a commentary on the Sefer HaYashar called Arle Yasharim. This Hakdamah cannot be found at the beginning of Volume 1 of Aruch HaShulchan. It can be found at the beginning of Aruch HaShulchan Choshem Mishpat. And the reason for that is that even though we begin Shulchan Aruch with Aruch Chaim, the Aruch HaShulchan did not begin publishing with Aruch Chaim. He began publishing with Choshem Mishpat. It was the first one he published, so that's where the Hakdamah goes. It has nothing to do with Choshem Mishpat per se. The Hakdamah is just about the Aruch HaShulchan in general, but it was the first volume that he published, happened to be on Choshem Mishpat. He published in around 1883, winter time of 1883, so that's the Hakdamah. That's why it's the Hakdamah to the Aruch HaShulchan on Choshem Mishpat. None of the other volumes have Hakdamah, unlike the Mishnah Berurah, who has two Hakdamahs, one on Chelek Aleph and the other on Chelek Gimel and Hilchos Shabbos. The Aruch HaShulchan does not have a Hakdamah, as far as I know, in any of the other volumes of Aruch HaShulchan. He was also from a prestigious rabbinic family, not from in terms of I guess I should say he spawned a prestigious rabbinic family. His father was not a known rabbi. I think his father was a businessman, worked for the Tsar of Russia. But his brother-in-law was the Netziv. His sister, I believe, was married to the Netziv, and the Aruch HaShulchan's son was the Torah Tamima, was the author of Torah Tamima, who himself was actually a businessman of some sort, unclear exactly what, a banker, or a postal worker, or something. He was some sort of businessman, and the Torah Tamima, obviously, you walk into any base medrash pretty much in the world, and you find the Torah Tamima on the shelf, and most of them you find an Aruch HaShulchan on the shelf as well. So pretty prominent, they became pretty prominent rabbinic. rabbinic family. So let's start with the actual Hakdama. First, the Aruch HaShulchan spends time, just a general overview of the Hakdama, is he tries to describe the importance of Torah Shebal Peh. He tries to describe how Torah Shebal Peh developed in terms of Mishnah, Gemara, Rishonim, Halacha, and why he thinks at the end, obviously why he thinks it's necessary for him to write this book and why all the other previous halacha books weren't good enough. But in order to explain that, he spends three pages describing what the background to Torah is, how Torah has developed since it was given at Har Sinai. So first he says the first thing that you need to be aware of is that Torah Shebal Peh is very, very special. Torah Shebal Peh is different than Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav is special too, but Torah Shebichsav without Torah Shebal Peh is a closed book. It is not something we will ever be able to understand. Torah Shebal Peh is infinite, whereas Torah Shebichsav is finite. If someone were to come out with an app for the Chumash, it would not be a very exciting app. Nothing really changes. It's the same words. There's no additions. There's not, anything that's an addition is Torah Shebal Peh. Everything that's in the Chumash is in the Chumash. The same Bible we had for thousands of years. But when Art School comes out with a Shas app, with a Gemara app, now that's cool. There are things that come in from all over the place, and Rishonim pop up, and here and there. So that's very exciting. That's constantly growing, and it's really infinite. Even with all the memory in an iPad, probably you could challenge that memory with the amount of Torah Shebal Peh that's out there. And if that's not enough, we could make more. We keep making more of it. Torah Shebal Peh is ever growing, ever expanding. And he says that's what the meaning of the pasuk Rachva Mitzvosecha Ma'od. What does it mean? The mitzvos are very broad. It means the Torah. Shebal Peh, the way we understand the mitzvos, is extremely broad and ever growing. Gal einai v'abita neflaos mitarasecha. Shlomo HaMelech says, the Aruch HaShulchan says, yeah, what are the neflaos of Torah? The neflaos are not Torah Shebichsav. The neflaos are Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah in general is the source of all chachma in the world. The Aruch HaShulchan points to the fact that the Shivas Kanei HaMenorah, of the seven branches of the menorah, six of them had the flames facing toward the middle branch, and the middle branch represents Torah. The other six represent the other six Chachmos. So although there is value to Chachma, there's value to Chachma outside of Torah, but all of that Chachma emerges and emanates from Torah, so that's part of the debate of whether of how worthwhile it is to engage in secular studies. So one side says, "What do you mean? Just learn Torah. It all comes from Torah anyway. So you'll get it. You'll end up getting." Look at someone like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. No, I don't even think he went to. He had secular studies in a high school. He had no secular training whatsoever, and he could wipe the floor with any of us who've taken physics in college. He knew physics better than anybody. I was reading in Rabbi Lau's book. He said that he was talking to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he was going to study secular studies for his bagrut or whatever, and Rav Shlomo Zalman gave him his blessing, and he said, "That's the hashkafa of your family. That's what you should do." So he said, "Yeah, but I don't think I'm going to study like physics. I have no interest in it. I'm more interested in like the humanities." And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "What? You have no interest in physics? It's so cool. How could you not be?" I don't know if he said cool, but he said, "How could you not be interested in physics? That's the Ribbono Shel Olam's world." I mean, and his knowledge of electricity, obviously, and you know, things of that nature. All that chachma, he obviously spoke to people and learned from a lot of other sources. But his mind was developed in the Beis Medrash. His mind was completely developed in the Beis. He never had any formal training in anything else, and yet he was able to learn all this chachma. And the other side says, "Yeah, but a more direct way to know physics is to actually study physics than to than to spend all the years in the Beis Medrash. So if there's value to it, maybe you should study it directly." Okay, whatever it is, I'm not going to get involved in that debate right now. But all the Aruch HaShulchan just makes the point that all chachma emanates from the chachmas haTorah. Now, what makes Torah Shebal Peh so great? We know the Gemara in Maseches Gittin tells us, the Aruch HaShulchan quotes, that Lo Karas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bris Im Yisrael Ella B'Shvil Dvarim Shebal Peh, that it's Dafka Torah Shebal Peh that caused HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a covenant with Klal Yisrael. Pasuk says, Ki Al Pi HaDvarim E'ele Karat Yitcha Bris Ves Yisrael. It's Dafka Al Peh, it's Dafka the Torah Shebal Peh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a covenant with Klal Yisrael. And he explains that just like a neshama gives meaning and vibrancy and life to the guf, So too, Torah Shebaalpeh does the same thing to Torah Shebichsav. One can study the Bible day and night and come up empty, and come up with nothing of vibrancy, nothing exciting, nothing that's going to educate his life and inform his life and change his life. Torah Shebaalpeh puts that all into Torah Shebichsav. It gives the vibrancy, it lends the Torah Schayim to Torah Shebichsav. And he gives several examples of how, if you were to open up a simple Torah Shebichsav, you would not know anything. You would have a completely wrong impression of what God wants from you. I was just reading yesterday, someone sent me a news story that in Morocco, there was a girl who was raped, which is not in itself is not newsworthy probably, but the judge in the rape case had ruled that the rapist has to marry her. That was it. Instead of getting punished, the rapist had to marry her. That itself was not so newsworthy either. But then the girl committed suicide because she had to marry the rapist. So everyone was up in arms how the judge could have such a horrible thing to the girl. So all the Bible thumping, they pull out the Bible. Bible says in Deuteronomy, right there, that if you rape somebody, that you have to marry them. So the judge was just following the Bible. So half the people were arguing that that religion is corrupt and religion destroys society. And the other half of people were arguing, no, religion is great. And this judge was right. It just didn't work out so well this time, but religion is great. Of course, there's a third daya that doesn't get so much attention. Third daya is that in order to understand the Bible, you also need Torah Shebaalpeh, and that the Bible and religion is great, but you can't corrupt it, and it's going to be corrupted if you're only reading straight out of Deuteronomy, and you don't also learn the halacha that the girl has the right of refusal, that if she doesn't want to marry the guy, she doesn't have to marry the guy. That din is there litovasa, not to hurt her or to ruin her in any way. So anyway, so the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't give that example of how one can corrupt the Torah by just reading Torah Shebichsav, but he gives a lot of other examples. For instance, Pasuk says, Lo sasa kal malacha. Torah says that you're not allowed to do any malacha on Shabbos. So what does malacha mean? If I just had the chumash, I would say I'm not allowed to schlep heavy furniture from one room to the other. And not only that, but then in this week's parsha, in Parshas Vayakhel, the Torah says, Lo svaru esh b'chol mosh v'seichem. But you already told me, Lo sasa kal malacha. Why does it have to specify Dafka Lo Savar Reish B'chol Mosh V'Seichem? So the Tzedukim read that, and the Tzedukim said it must be that not only are you not allowed to turn on a light, you're not allowed to have light B'chol Mosh V'Seichem on Shabbos, and therefore they sat in the dark while Shabbos. And the Aruch HaShulchan has the expression, he says, yes, they sat in the dark because their eyes were darkened from the aura of Torah Shebaalpeh, that they didn't get to appreciate the light of Torah Shebaalpeh, so they never got to see what the Torah actually wants from us. In Nehemiah, Perikud Gimli quotes, we find that when people buy things on Shabbos, the Navi gets angry. What's the Isser? It doesn't appear anywhere in Torah that you're not allowed to make Kinyanim on Shabbos. But again, a lot of the Ratzon Hashem of what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is not spelled out in the Torah. In Yirmiyahu, Perikud Ches, we learn about the Isser Hotza'ah. But the Torah says, Al Yetzei Ish Mi Mekomo in Parshas Beshalach, which sounds like you're not even allowed to leave your house. And once again, the Tzedukim took it very literally. They didn't leave their house on Shabbos. That is not at all what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us on Shabbos, but you just open up a Chumash, that's what you'll see. Another example, in Parshas Kisisa, it says, what are you not allowed to do during Shemitah year? B'charish u'b'katzir tishbos. You shouldn't do Charisha or Ktsira, plowing or harvesting. And what about Zriya, Netiya, Nichush, what about all those things? All those things from the Torah, you'd say, are mutter. We need a Torah Shebaalpeh to tell us, no, we derive those other Yisurim of what you're not allowed to do in Shemitah from the Yisurim that are spelled out in the Torah. Even just when to celebrate the holidays is never spelled out in the Torah. Not only is it not spelled out in the Torah, it's almost misleading in the Torah, because the Torah tells us that there's a holiday for the Chodesh Aviv and a holiday for the Chodesh HaAsif. So what's Aviv? Aviv is springtime. In the Northern Hemisphere or Southern Hemisphere? How do we know? Spring is different in different places of the world. In Australia, it's different than it is in New York. And Chag HaAsif also. It depends on where you are in the world. Not only that, Torah says Pesach should be in the first month of the year. How do we generally count the months of the year? We start, when's Rosh Hashanah? Tishrei. So first month, you would think it's Tishrei. Seventh month should be Sukkot. You'd think that would be Nisan. Yet, it's not. It's the other way around. We need a Mesorah. We need a Torah Shebaalpeh in order to make sense of any of it. There are contradictions in the Torah that we wouldn't know how to reconcile. Torah says, Shivas Yamim Tochel Matzos. And then in Parshas Re'eh, it says, Sheshas Yamim Tochel Matzos. What's that about? Is it 7 days or it's 6 days? Without Torah Shebal Peh, we don't know any of this stuff. We wouldn't know. Torah says that you should put Os al Yadecha and Totafos Bein Einecha. What are Totafos? What's that supposed to look like? Kid came over to me this morning. He had black tefillin, thank God, right? And on, you know, the protective box over the Shaliyad, he had a white protective box over the Shaliyad. He said, is this mutter? Are you allowed to have this? I'm like, who makes that? Who makes a white box? I never seen that before. I don't think it's us. It's not part of the tefillin itself. It's probably not us, which is weird. The Torah says pre etz hadar, that you need to take a pre etz hadar in addition to the other gimel minim on sukkahs. Any beautiful fruit, pomegranate, what's beautiful? Also, we need a Torah Shebal Peh for any of these things. The Torah sometimes speaks very cryptically. The Torah tells us that you should shecht v'zavachta mi bekorach u'mitzoncha kasher tzivisicha, in the same way that I commanded you. Only one problem. Where did you command us? What are you talking about? So it doesn't tell us. So we need sugyas in Maseches Chulin to discuss what in the world this is all about, and to teach us all the halachas of Shechita. And also, interestingly, the Aruch HaShulchan makes the Ha'ara. You have very, very few mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro that are actually spelled out in the Torah. Where does it say, for instance, that there's a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of Nichum Aveilim, of Kamilas Chasadim in general? In the Torah, you don't find that in the Torah. What do you have? You have dinim of shomrim, you have mitzvah of tzedakah, hashavas aveda, few and far between. You don't have so many mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveiro spelled out in the Torah. Without a Torah Shebal Peh, one is likely to read the five books of Moses, read the Torah Shebal Ksav, and say that this is a very this religion is very unbalanced. And it very much emphasizes Ben Adam L'Makom and de-emphasizes Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. But Torah Shebal Peh fills in all the blanks. And it's not just Din D'Rabbanan. Torah Shebal Peh fills in all the blanks on the Daraisa level, that it tells us how to derive from the Torah itself all of these things. And he says that's why Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days in Har Sinai. To get the Luchos, to get the actual Torah Shebal Ksav, all he had to do is order it on Amazon and God would send him the book. I mean, what's the big deal? It takes a minute. Overnight, you get the book. What do you need 40 days for? Because there was a lot of it that wasn't in the book. There was a lot of Torah Shebal Peh that he had to get. So then the Aruch HaShulchan says that's the nekuda about the chashivas of Torah Shebal Peh. But how did it all happen? How do we get from all of that being Bal Peh to having what we have today with libraries full of written books that are essentially Torah Shebal Peh? So we all know Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi saw that there was great pizur in Am Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael was scattered around all over the world. We were in different places, and we were losing a lot of knowledge, and therefore he thought it would be worthwhile to put together a book, a single book that we can all look to have as the centerpiece of our knowledge, of our Torah knowledge. And with that, he put together the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. He got together all the different scholars, all the different Tanaim, and he put together Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. And throughout the generations of all the Amoraim, all they were interested in at that point was understanding the Mishnayos, the Toseftas, the Braisas. They were not interested in going back and reinventing the wheel and trying to make their own Mishnayos and their own. No, they were interested in trying to make sense of that, because at that point, Rebbe had put together everything you needed to know in Torah Shebal Peh was here. It was in these books. You just had to find it now. But he gave direction, because a lot of times it's like when I teach in high school classes, especially lower level classes where kids don't know so well how to take notes, I always try to make sure that everything we learn is in an outline, clear for them, and they may have to take their own notes within the outline, but it's all within the outline. That way, if they miss something, at least they know that they're missing something. Otherwise, if you just lecture, so the kid will never know. I have 2 pages of notes. What do you mean? We learn more than 2 pages? I mean, he would never know if he's missing anything. He's got all the notes. He listened, then he got what he got. He would never know if he's missing something, but when you see that something's missing in the outline, then you know you're missing something. So that's what Rebbe did with the Shisha Mishnah. I learned so much Torah Shebal Peh. How could I be missing anything? No, did you learn Kachim? Did you learn this Masechta, that Parak? Do you understand this Mishnah? Now I know I have a framework to know what I need to understand in order to have a full picture of Torah Shebal Peh.
Did the author of the Mishnah darshan it out?
They had Mesorah that they collected from all over. There were a lot of Mesorahs. So Rebbe did a lot of collecting. He collected different Mesorahs, and that's why he had different Machlokasim. But yeah, he was still capable of making his own drushes also. Through the Torah Shebal Peh, the Mesorah was for the drush. It wasn't only on specific dinim, that's Halacha Moshe Mesinai. It was also on how to make drushes, on the methodology to derive from the Chumash. So that was what the Amoraim were worried about. That, but then they realized, after some time, that even the Mishnah wasn't sufficient, and therefore Ravina and Ravashi got together, and they put together the Gemara. And once they put together the Gemara, similarly, later rabbis determined that we will no longer go back to the Mishnah and try to figure it out on our own. It's got to come from the Gemara. If someone starts passing halachas from Mishnayos against the Gemara, they will quickly be thrown out of any major Orthodox community. They will not be accepted. The rabbis determined that when Ravina Ravashi did this job of putting together the Gemara, they did a good job, and that that provides the text from where we can derive everything we need to know. And the Aruch HaShulchan describes the major commentaries of the Gemara. I always wondered about this. How did Tosos end up on the page? Why not, I don't know, the Rashba? The Ran? The Rush? The Rush would be so much easier to learn together with Gemara than Tosfos. Tosfos brings in 18 million different Gemaras. You know, the Rush, he just, you know, gives you what you need to know from that Gemara, and every once in a while he'll quote another Gemara, but it's not really much, much easier Rishon to read than Tosfos. So the Aruch HaShulchan thinks that it's Dafka Tosfos, because Tosfos was the greatest. He says, not just Stam, that Tosfos happened to fit or whatever. Rashi, obviously, is Rashi. Rashi is the Menorah HaTahora, from where we're Mekabel everything. But he says, Tosfos became widely accepted in the Aruch HaShulchan's words, is because Gedolim B'Chachmo B'Minyan Mikol Chachma Yisrael Shebi'imeyam, the Balei HaTosfos, were greater in both Chachma and Minyan than all of the wise Chachamim of their generations. And Kishmonim Balei Tosfos Lamdu Lefnei Ha'ari HaChai Rabbeinu Agadol Rabbeinu Tamzal. And what made them so great is that they were Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam. So you have 80 great scholars who were all Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam. They were greater than everybody else, and that's why they were able, and you get the impression it's not just that Rabbeinu Tam was so much greater than everybody else, but it's that 80 people, 80 brains, the quantity of insight, of perspectives that were put into Tosfos make it that much more valuable, as opposed to you read a Rush, you read a Rashba, you read a Ramban, you get the Rush's opinion, you get the Rashba's opinion, you get the Ramban's opinion, you read Tosfos, you get the compilation of 80 different people's opinions. So that's what makes the Balei HaTosfos so marvelous and so amazing to learn when you're learning Gemara. They also included a section of Shas called Agadita Gemaras. Now, Agadita Gemaras are not at all direct. It's almost like the book was written by completely different people. It's not at all similar in style, in content, in no way at all is it similar to Halacha Gemaras. So why is that? Why is Agadita Gemara so cryptic? You ever read the Gemaras in the beginning of the fifth parak of Basra, the Juggler and the King Gemaras, you know, about demons jumping over bridges and juggling cups of wine, and it doesn't even mean anything. You read it, it's like a silly story. It's not even a story that makes sense. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains, like many others, the Gra explains the same, that it was Dafka put in vague and confusing language, because to understand the deep philosophical underpinnings of Judaism, you really need to be ready for it. And we're not ready for it unless you are Mali Kreso, unless a person has learned a fair amount of Yerushamayim and a fair amount of Halacha, and then a person is ready to understand the depth of Judaism. He gives a very, very interesting mashal. He says, like if you're sitting in a dark room for a very, very long time, and then, like Trisim in Israel, you know how you can make it really dark in the room, and like it could be 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a bright sunny day, and as far as you're concerned, it's like the middle of the night, the best thing ever. So I remember Ben Azman, and Karen staying at a friend's apartment, and like there are 10 KBY guys that all missed Minyan because of Trisim, because like we went to sleep late, never knew it was morning time. It was just so dark in the room. So if a person's in a dark room, then all of a sudden you open up the Trisim and the sun shines in, he can't see anything. He's completely blinded by it. Our eyes are not ready for the Agadita. We're not ready for what the Agadita has to offer. So Chazal didn't want to give it to us all at once. You have to work at it. You have to understand. You have to get a Mesorah. It takes a lot of time till you can adjust to the light of Agadita Gemara. Then the Aruch HaShulchan goes on to discuss how Machlokas developed in Jewish tradition. And he says, you know, Machlokas can be a very the existence of machlokas can be very discouraging to the Talmud who wants to learn and wants to have Yerushimayim and wants to trust that everything that we're doing is really the Ratzon Hashem and this is what God intended when he gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, because there are thousands of machlokasim. How do we know if God intended any of this? Maybe there's a machlokas about Lo Sirtzach or something, and it doesn't really mean kill, it means something else. When I was in Keren Biavne, there was one of our classmates, not my classmate, my brother's classmate in Keren Biavne. I was there when he actually did it. He was writing Bar Ilan when I was there, who killed the Prime Minister of Israel. So the Mashkiach in the yeshiva got up and he said, you know, I always give drushas about, you know, Lo Sirtzach means don't embarrass someone publicly and don't do this. He said, I never thought to tell you, do not kill, boys. You're not allowed to actually kill somebody. So how do I know that's not subject to some machlokas? Maybe there's a machlokas about that. It's very discouraging to see about all these machlokas. And so the Aruch HaShulchan says, no, don't be discouraged by machlokas. Machlokas is not an indication of the weakness of our Masorah. And over here, the Aruch HaShulchan borrows directly from the Rambam Nisakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos. Rambam says, no, Machlokas is multiple perspectives all within our Masorah. And quoting from Rashi, Masech Ksuvos Daf Nun Zayin, that when you have two different perspectives on an issue, so in certain circumstances, that perspective is more carries more weight. In other circumstances, the other perspective carries more weight. It's not that either one is wrong. They're both right in their own way and in the right kinds of circumstances. And they're both fair. It's like the example that people give. What color is this Gemara that I'm holding up? So you're going to tell me, well, I don't know what you would tell me. What do you call that? Brown, I guess? So you would tell me it's brown. So I would say, no, it's not. It's white and black. From where I'm looking at it, it's white and black. Because, look, over here, it's white and black. Are either of us wrong? No, we're both a good trick, right? So neither of us are wrong. We just have different perspectives. That's how Machlokas works. And he says, the raya that Machlokas is not from a weakness in Masorah, again, echoing the Rambam, is the fact that there are so many elements that Machlokas never crept in. So many elements of our Masorah that we never had Machlokas. No one ever argued about what a Prietz Hadar is. Everyone knew it was an Esrog. How could there not have been a machlokas about that? Is there anything more vague than the words pre-ate hadar, a beautiful fruit? I mean, beauty in general, is there anything more vague than that, than the word beautiful? Beautiful to different people means very, very different things. To some people, whatever, we don't need to go into the details, but it means a lot of different things to different people. Look at artwork from a couple hundred years ago and artwork from now, what they consider beautiful. No one ever argued whether ayin tachas ayin means mamon. That was accepted. No one ever argued how many batim there should be in the tefillin. No one ever argued how many parshios there should be in the mezuzah. No one ever argued how many brachos there should be before and after kriya shema. You don't have machlokasim, but so much. And that's because there's no weakness in our Masorah. And he says the slight details with it, like changes in the nusach of a bracha, ava rabba, rava solom, it's insignificant. But on the bigger picture, there's no machlokas about the major things. And he says, and the greatest raya is, no one even ever argued about what the 39 malachas of Shabbos are. This week's parsha again. Torah says you're not allowed to do malacha. Where do we learn malacha? From the malachas of Mishkan. The Torah never told us, never even mentioned what the 39 malachas of Mishkan are. And yet we're supposed to figure out what the 39 malachas of Shabbos are? No one ever argued about that. No one ever argued which day of the week to keep Shabbos or when to start Shabbos, that it shouldn't be at sundown, it should be the next morning. No one ever said that. It's pashut that he started sundown. It's not exactly so pashut that he started sundown, depending on how you hold what Shkia means, and whatever. But no one ever argued about the basics. A few details, a few minutes here and there, but no one ever argued about the basics. And that's because of the strength of our Masorah. And he says, "Kvar Amar Echad Migdolei Chachmei Yavan." I don't know who's referring to. I meant to ask somebody. I forgot that he says one of the great Greek Chachamim once said, "Shechishuv Hamolad LiYisrael," the ability of the Jewish people to figure out the Molad Halavana, to understand the Molad Halavana, who os umofis al hanavua bi Yisrael, that's a symbol that Klal Yisrael must have nevua, because in that time to be able to figure out a calendar that's going to work forever, it's impossible. It's mathematically, they didn't have computers that could figure that out. to be able to work on the calendar so much in advance that we have a set calendar where Jews are all over the world, and yet we never have any issue. He goes through. You have Jews in Arzos Rusland and Poland and Österreich and Arzos Paras and Morocco and Algiers and Tunisia, and he goes through all the different places where Jews are, and we never had contact with each other. We didn't have telephones. We didn't have any way to, up until the printing press, we couldn't even print books and send them to each other, and yet there was never a machlokas about when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. Through all these centuries, never a machlokas about when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. That's an osumofes of Nevuah B'Yisrael, of the emes of our Mesorah, of the reliability of our Mesorah. He says, you have to look at machlokas, and there's a very famous mashal that the Aruch HaShulchan gives. I do believe it is his own mashal. He says that you have to look at the Mesorah, is Toraseinu HaKadosh HaTorah, Kol HaTorah Kula Nikrei Shira. All of Torah is called a shira. What makes a song good? If a song is just monotonous, it's not a song. It's just, it would sound like me singing. It's not musical at all. What makes a song good? When there are instruments, multiple instruments that are playing in concert with each other. One is a little more high-pitched, one's a little more low-pitched. They each have different sounds that they emit, but all together it creates this magnificent shira of Torah. He says, that's what machlokas is. Machlokas is having someone who plays guitar, and someone who plays drums, and someone who plays saxophone, and someone singing, doing different things, all lending their own voice to the symphony of Torah. That's the Shira of Torah. It's a magnificent symphony. That's how he understands it. Now, that's all nice and good and true, says the Aruch HaShulchan, but that is all in terms of Torah in general. In terms of Halacha, you can't really say that. You can't really say, oh, well, you know, you could do this way, that way, or the other way. It's all good. No, in Halacha, you need to make decisions. In Halacha, there needs to be direction. In Halacha, you have to know what's a yes and what's a no. It could be that Beis Shammai was very, very brilliant, and Beis Shammai was Divrei Elokim Chayim, but in Halacha, we don't accept Shitas Beis Shammai. So the idea of Elu Ve'elu is in Pilpulas Shel Torah. Specific instruction is necessary for Halacha, and that's why the Rif, the Rush, the Rambam, the Tur, all wrote books that try to just give you bottom line. We know there are machloksim. We're interested in giving you a shita. This is what you should do. Yes, there are machloksim in Tanayim and Amurayim and early Rishonim. This is what you should do. This is the halacha. That was the purpose of all their books. Now, he writes very poetically about the development of the Shulchan Aruch, and he says how Yosef HaTzadik and Moshe Ish Elokim, referring to Rav Yosef Cairo and Rav Moshe Isilis, Yosef HaTzadik and Moshe Ish Elokim wrote the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe to give us a little more of an appreciation of where the Torah was getting everything from. And he says, once the Shulchan Aruch was published, again, using biblical figures to describe the process of the development of the Shulchan Aruch, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, Vayikach Moshe es atzmuso shel Yosef atzadik vihichnis devarv betof divrei Rabbeinu Beis Yosef. Obviously, play on words about how Moshe Rabbeinu took the Atzmos Yosef, the bones of Yosef. At a Mitzrayim, he says that Moshe Isulis took the Atzmuso Shel Yosef Atzadik, the essence of Rav Yosef Cairo, of his idea of putting together a book of just bottom line halacha of what you need to do, and he added to it the Ashkenazic practices so that Ashkenazim can know what to do as well. And he said together this was the most amazing teamwork ever. Very often when books are written by more than one person, it's choppy, because the it doesn't read straight, it doesn't read nicely, because you have two different styles and two different points of view, and it's not always so clear. But he said this produced the most magnificent halachic work in our history. It was produced by two people who were both working l'shem shemayim. So when you have Rav Yosef Cairo and Moshe Isilis together, they were banu es kol be, the shneim ke'echad banu es kol beis Yisrael bedinim hanuhugim bezman hazeh. Two of them together built up the entire klal Yisrael with all the dinim that we need. So, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that was a great thing, but they never intended, neither Rav Yosef Cairo nor Rav Moshe Isilis ever intended, that a person is going to paskin a halacha by opening up a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is a good way to review all the halachas that you already learned in the Beis Yosef, but they never, and Beis Yosef writes this explicitly, that you're not supposed to paskin by opening up a Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, some of the early Achronim go crazy about the fact that people are using the Shulchan Aruch to paskin. They couldn't believe it. The Marsha writes in Sota Daf Chav Beis, Ubedoros halalu osan shemorin halacha mitocha shulchan aruch, varehem enem yodim tame inyan. People don't know what's behind the halacha. Shulchan aruch just gives you the bottom line. Tame inyan shall call davarim lo yudakt kubedavar mitchila betocha talmud, shushimush tal midichamim. You need to first learn the sugya and the Gemara. Vitaos nafal ba'arasim, and therefore people make mistakes in psak. Varein bechlal mevali olam v'yesh ligor behen. These people are ruining the world, and we should get angry at these people. And not only that, the Madani Yom Tov, the Tos Yantov in Hakdamah to Madani Yom Tov writes, Va'af harav gadol mari karozal, asher hishbir bar b'sifro beis Yosef, he gave us nourishment in beis Yosef, umitocho asa achibur shakar shulchan aruch. And as a summary, a Cliff's Notes, he wrote something called Shulchan Aruch, b'dmuso b'tzalmul shal sefer haturim, to be more similar to the tour. Va'lashonu tamid lashon haramim zal, but in Shulchan Aruch, a lot of times he doesn't even use his own words. He just borrows the exact terminology that the Rambam uses. Obviously, lo neskaven me'olam laharos mitoch sifro chalila v'chalila milachshov v'lov kazos. God forbid, he never intended someone's going to open up a Shulchan Aruch and paskin from that. You might as well just open up a Rambam then, if that's what you were going to do. No, he wanted you to look in the Beis Yosef, and then you'll know the sugya. Look in the Gemara, and you'll know the sugya. And then you'll open up a Shulchan Aruch. So the Levush tried to solve this problem, but the problem with that is that the Levush tried to solve this problem a long, long time ago by writing his Sefer. And after that, many other Achronim came along, a Prima Gadim came along, and a Gra, and a Magen Avram, and a Chalkas Mechokik, and a Taz. And so you have all these other Achronim that we need to take into account. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, I'm here to solve that problem. Instead of people opening up a Shulchan Aruch and trying to figure out what to do, they can use my book and they can really figure out what to do. Because one of the great features of the Aruch HaShulchan for anyone who loves learning halacha is that the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't just tell you what to do, he tells you where it's from. He starts with the Gemara, he goes through the Rishonim. It's not so useful if you just want to know, bottom line, what do I need to do right now? Quick answer, Aruch HaShulchan is not so useful. For that, a Chayyadam, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, they just tell you bottom line what you need to do. The Aruch HaShulchan is much more useful, though, if you want an appreciation of the halacha and where the halacha comes from. It's the only one of its kind. None of the other svarim, not the Chayyadam, not the Mishum Brura, not the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, none of the other svarim written around that tkufa really provided us with what the Aruch HaShulchan provided us with. He gave us the ability to look back at the Gemara in the simplest possible terms. And he tries to spell out 10 simple things that he's providing in his Sefer. He says, number one, everything in the Shulchan Aruch is explained over here with the reasons and the logic. I'm not just going to tell you what the Shulchan Aruch says. Number two, all the opinions of major Achronim are quoted over here in Aruch HaShulchan. Number three, whenever there's a machlokas, I'm going to quote both sides of the machlokas and Alpaskin. Very unusual. A lot of times you have Svarim nowadays, especially, it's a very popular thing, just quote all the Shitos. But everyone's afraid to paskin. You open up any of the popular English halacha works. There are 18 different shitos, and they say, so it's always good to be machmir. So no one's paskining. Everyone's just saying the 18 different shitos, and it's always good to be machmir. Yes, we know it's always good to be machmir, but what's the halacha? So you need a posek to paskin the halacha. The Aruch HaShulchan says, I'll paskin for you. Sometimes the kula, sometimes the chumra, like a real, posek is supposed to do. I'll give you what you're actually supposed to do. Number four, when Achronim argue on the Balei HaShulchan Aruch, he says, and they ask kashas on the Shulchan Aruch that seem like murderous, unanswerable kashas. I'll tell you why the Shulchan Aruch is right. I work very hard to be miyashiv, the Balei HaShulchan Aruch, the Ramah, and the Beis Yosef. He also says, I work very hard to explain. Number five, I work very hard to explain the Shitos HaRambam. Very often the Rambam is attacked by later authorities, and I want to show you that the Rambam was brilliant, and most of what the Rambam said can be defended. I work very hard to defend the Rambam. Number six, he says that there are a lot of halachas from Rishonim that never made it into halachic literature and into previous halachic literature, and he says, I'm going to bring them. Every once in a while, you'll find a Rishon that for whatever reason, Beis Yosef didn't quote, none of the others quoted, so I try to enhance this work with some of those Rishonim as well. And he says, I have a lot of chidushim la'alacha that are my own chidushim la'alacha that are never discussed earlier, but I'm always careful to introduce those with a nirali or yirali, so that you can know that this is mine and this doesn't come from anywhere else. He also writes that whenever they're number seven, whenever there are no sources are quoted, he says, whenever I write something stam, it's from the Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah. With a little bit of explanatory notes, but pretty much straight from the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. If I'm quoting anybody else, I'll quote them and I'll put their names in brackets right after the statement. But otherwise, if I just write Stam, assume it's Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. Number 80 says, very often when you analyze a sugya and you try to learn it la'alacha, what will emerge is a brand new understanding of the sugya. Now, you could have learned the Gemara, you're not learning it la'alacha, you understand it one way. You learn just the halacha, you have no appreciation that even comes from a Gemara. When you learn a Gemara la'alacha, you take it down to the halacha, what will emerge is a brand new understanding of the entire Gemara. So he says, I will often give you that, but only in brackets, because I know that a lot of people, when they open up the Aruch HaShulchan, are expecting halacha and halacha only. And therefore, I don't want to give you too much information, so you could skip the brackets if you're not interested. But if you want to know how this affects the sugya, then you should read the bracketed passages as well. A lot of times they'll quote passages from the Yerushalmi in the brackets as well. And then he says, number 9, I bring all those halachos, even those that aren't practical nowadays, dinim of Sanhedrin, Asmicha, dinim of Fashos, Trisha v'Chakira, a lot of the Sanhedrin sugyas that we're doing this year. He says, even though they're not so halach l'maisa, I try to quote them all. And finally he says, that in anything that's not nogei l'maisa, so who's the Maradasra? Those things that are nogei l'maisa, so we know the Maradasra is Rav Yosef Cairo and Rav Moshe Isserles is the Shulchan Aruch. Anything that's not 100% nogei l'maisa, la'alach l'maisa b'zman hazeh, he says the Rambam is the Maradasra. So I'm always going to assume stam like the Rambam. There are other Rishonim that argue all the time, but that's where we go with the Rambam. So he says, he ends off this Akdamah the way many people end off their Akdamahs, by saying, I'm not saying I have a monopoly on the truth. I'm not saying you have to accept everything I say, but at least read it and write me a letter. If you don't like anything I say, I'll be happy to be modala MS. He already was publishing, this was in the last 30 years of his life that he began publishing these things, but this was 30 years before he died. So he said, okay, so write me a letter and tell me if, 25 years before he died, so write me a letter and tell me if I got something wrong. I'm not saying Kabbalah is deity, I'm just providing you with what I think the halacha is, and you could take it or leave it. Overall, a very, very unique contribution to halachic literature, the Aruch HaShulchan. There are a lot of kitzur svarim that are not all that different from each other. The Aruch HaShulchan was quite different from all the rest. His ability, his koach de'atera, is quite strong. His ability to be mekel was quite strong, and his ability to go back to understand the Gemara and understand the underpinnings of every halacha, I think, is what really sets the Aruch HaShulchan apart. I'm told that Rabbi Henkin Zichrono Livracha, not the Rabbi Henkin that's alive today, as well, his grandfather, the one who was the posek ador in America before Rav Moshe, held that the Aruch HaShulchan was the posek achron. Nowadays, a lot of people view the Mishnah Berurah as the posek achron. He held that the Aruch HaShulchan was posek achron, partially because he was a community rabbi, partially because he had the koach de'atera a little bit, partially because he wrote an all Dalit Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, not just on Aruch Chaim, a variety of reasons, but he held that the Aruch HaShulchan was the Posek Achron, assuming that you have to say there's any Posek Achron. I don't know, there's like, people get very sensitive about that. Is Mishbur the Posek Achron? I don't know, why do you have to say anyone's a Posek Achron? Just say that you'll learn them in whichever one makes the most sense. That's how you paskin. Like, I don't know why you have to follow every psak of the Mishnah Berurah. Moshe is not allowed to argue. Moshe argues sometimes in Mishnah Berurah. And if you think Rav Moshe is right, Rav Moshe is right. If you think that Mishnah Berurah is right, so you paskin the Mishnah Berurah. I don't know why you have to say this one's a posek achron. I think they all add a lot to religious halachic literature, and we should accept the truth from all of them. So anyway, that's the basic background to the Sefer Aruch HaShulchan.